Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. You can always tell the people who are early adapters to Unitarian Universalism because you will hear them singing in a large crowd and they will say the word soul, that saved a soul like me instead of saved a wretch like me. I'm one of those people who loves that song. And for years I sang that and always stumbled over that word wretch, sensing that being a wretch, being flawed at all, meant that I was unacceptable or unlovable. So in order to avoid seeing myself as a wretch, I tried to be perfect. The sermon that I'd like to share with you this morning is about love. In particular, it's about falling in love and kind of the excitement and the energy and the tingling in the pit of your stomach that you get when you anticipate giving and also receiving love. But that tingling of unsureness about not knowing how people will respond if you don't look your best. Like the time early in my career when I was candidating at a new church. And for the final candidating sermon, which I had carefully prepared and I was fairly confident with, I got up in the morning to go preach that sermon, and before I went to church, I looked in the mirror and noticed that I had a zit roughly the size of Rhode Island right on the edge of my nose. And I had to go in as if nothing was wrong, and I felt completely good about presenting myself. This morning's sermon is like that. It's about imperfect people who try to be perfect. I thought early on that being perfect, at least appearing perfect, would stave off disaster, would keep me from rejection or embarrassment or pain. And so I tried. Lord, I tried. But a lifetime of lessons led me to this conclusion. Being perfect is painful too. Perhaps even more painful than being a wretch. Being perfect means trying harder. It means always doing more. It means always having to have the right answer. Being perfect is lonely. It means never being able to admit that you need help, that you don't know something, that you can't make it on your own. Even though it may seem like perfect people make everything look perfectly easy, there is nothing easy about being perfect. It's like writer Albert Camus once said, "Most people never realize how much effort it takes others merely to be normal." Imagine the effort it takes to be perfect. One of the things that helped me most in my struggles with perfection was to realize that other people carried this same uncertainty and I wasn't alone. And I wished that I had known that earlier in my life, that I wasn't the only one who worried, who tried so hard. Were you one of these people? Did you have older brothers and sisters who always got your parents' attention and approval? Ever gotten a B and been told you should have gotten an A? Ever compare your hair or your skin or your physique with movie stars or models in magazines? Didn't measure up on somebody's good parenting scale? Scored low on the self-evaluations in Cosmo or GQ? Saying yes to any of these doesn't mean that you have a problem with perfectionism, but perfectionism becomes a problem when we notice these same voices offering this criticism still in our head years later, when we become the ones who carry and offer those voices of old teachers and parents and siblings and bosses, voices that are pressed to attention when we're walking into a big challenge. They chant mantras to us when we're trying to be calm, telling us to be a little faster, a little cleaner, a little more thorough, a little bit more prompt and conscientious. I grew up with a chorus line of those voices in my head, and after a while they were so prominent I gave them a name. I called them the committee. And at first I thought that they were on my side, but after a while it seemed that all they were trying to do was find different ways to call me a wretch. And I began to hate the committee. My colleague Barbara Merritt reminds us of some of the propaganda that her committee used to lecture her about. Her list went something like this. Perfect children are always popular and always friendly. They're always neat and clean and polite. They never swear or slouch. They're always polite to their parents. They never get angry. Later, we learn that perfect professionals are always calm and know what to do. They never ask for help. They're always prompt, careful, and competent. They're at work early and stay late. They finish their work every day. They never procrastinate. The perfect artist always sells her work. The perfect manager always gets promoted. The perfect teacher has all bright, eager kids who score high. Perfect ministers love everyone, all the time, no exceptions. And they write perfect sermons every week. And the mantra from my committee, perfect people are perfectly lovable. Early on, I gave away to my committee my own power and let them run my business. They became authoritative voices of influence, and they became so powerful that they opened up branch offices all over the country, bringing in growth consultants, writers from popular magazines, celebrity spokespeople, and the message they touted was this: perfect people are in perfect health, have perfect bodies, are perfectly happy and perfectly able. Brokenness and inability aren't allowed in a perfect world. That's what my committee packaged and sold me. Sound familiar? Years ago, when I lived in Berkeley, I had a friend whose name is Susan, who always told me that she too failed to feel like she measured up. As a little girl, she got a dollar a week allowance, but instead of spending it on herself, she saved all of her pennies, and then she wrapped them very carefully in tissue paper, tying them neatly at the top with scotch tape, and on the tag, she wrote, "To God." And then climbing the ladder of the attic, which, of course, is where God lived, she left them. So certain was she that she didn't measure up that she even had to bribe God. Each week she left a new bundle where the last one had been taken. And it wasn't until years later that she discovered that it was not God, but indeed her little sister who was accepting her contrition. The problem with perfectionism is that it makes us feel like we have to bribe people with time or compliments or money or special attention just to deserve their love. What of yourself have you given away trying to be perfect? Problems with perfection can also be seen when we deny our imperfections. When I was 12, I moved to a new school where I had two ginormous fears. First, that I would have no friends, and second, it was the first time that we were supposed to dress out for PE. On the first day, I met Spence, and it was also his first day in a new school, and we helped each other through those first awkward days and met at lunch and talked in the halls. But the following Monday, our first day of PE, Spence came to me, and he said that he was scared, that he felt intimidated about showering with the bigger boys in the afternoon. And when he asked if I was scared, I didn't want to seem wimpy, so I said, "No, why should I be?" Denying my imperfections cost me Spence's friendship. he didn't trust me anymore after that, especially when he saw me later in the locker room with no less than 5 towels. One of the things that has made me sad is seeing the number of kids who feel like they need to pad the difference between what they know that they are and what they feel like they have to be, trying to puff themselves up, sprinkling their life with a few exaggerations, knowing some famous people or taking credit for feats not actually accomplished like they described. I had a practice of telling white lies as a child, trying to change my normal life into a more perfect form, which got me into some very uncomfortable situations before I realized that I was just adding to the standards that were already impossible, all the while feeling even more like a wretch. And before I was married, I came across an adult version of that game played on the singles circuits, where men pad their salaries and women pad their bras. It is tempting to try and hide behind veils of perfection, disguising our flaws and covering up our insecurities, but it becomes a problem when we give up who we are and try to be something we're not. When we can't tell the difference between the voices of the committee and our own voice. When we spend all of our energy trying to be perfect and it's still not satisfying. It's not satisfying because so many of us, thinking we're seeking self-satisfaction, end up practicing self-absorption and self-obsession instead. Reverend Dr. Forrest Church, minister of All Souls Church in New York City for 30 years, commented this: "Just as self-righteousness is the opposite of righteousness, so self-consciousness is the opposite of consciousness." When we spend so much energy and attention on ourselves, trying to be perfect, we fail to listen and to notice to the very people who are trying to connect with us. The problem with perfection is that we end up becoming perfect strangers. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. It's still tough to say, but maybe not because wretch translates as imperfect, but because imperfect implies unlovable, and we need to know there's a difference. Being perfect doesn't make us more lovable. In fact, it's usually the opposite. In perfection, there are no flaws or chips or cracks to hold on to, nothing endearing, nothing human about us. When we try to be perfect, we sacrifice our ability to connect in real ways and settle for ways to be accepted. But it's a lousy trade, choosing perfection or connection. It's a choice that we have to think carefully about, because it's often hard to love something that's perfect. It's easy, on the other hand, to love Brew and all of its members. This congregation with 282 members and 480 opinions, we are far from perfect. We have far more examples of how we have failed to solve the world's problem, or even our own, than we have examples of where we've succeeded. But there is one thing that I believe to the end about this community, that when we figure out how to be imperfect and struggle together with our eyes and our hearts wide open, we will begin to see something we're struggling for, and it won't be conveyed in a long-range plan. It will be for one another. But we need to see beyond people's efforts at perfection and be willing to allow them to see beyond ours. I love my wife, and I know that she loves me despite how often I bring her up in my sermons. But one of the things that frustrates her the most is how inordinately long it sometimes takes me to figure out that she is right. Or even worse, when I am wrong. Flat out wrong, like when I try to give driving directions. And it could be very funny and enjoyable, except for the fact that I get defensive, or I make excuses, or in some way try to maintain my own claim to perfection. It sometimes takes me forever to see, honestly see, that she's just trying to connect that deeper human side of me. Is that so hard? If you're trying to be perfect, it's impossible. When I was an intern in Toronto, my intern committee and I struggled to get to know one another for the first 6 months, and in my midterm evaluation, they said that they really wanted to get to know me, but they were worried that I was trying too hard to be perfect to relate. And they said that it felt like that there was a veneer that they had to get through to get close to me. My intern committee had to get to know me. It was their job. What happens when we try and hold up all this perfection and people don't have to get to know us? Sharing our less than perfect sides is hard and risky, and it goes against everything that the committee tells us, but it's often the most important thing that people look for when they're trying to connect with us. It is our humanness and not our godliness that is most lovable about us. That is what Spence was looking for. That is what my intern committee was looking for. That is what Liz looks for. And that is what we all look for when we're looking for love. Approval and acceptance is nice, but connection goes much deeper. Acceptance is for what we show. Connection is for who we are. Acceptance validates our image. Connection comforts our soul. The etymology of the word perfect comes from the French meaning complete or whole beyond any practical improvement. We are not perfect. We may not even be as good as we would like to be, but that's because we're not done yet. And it is in our undoneness, our frayed edges, our tatteredness, our tenderness, that we attract the love that helps us connect. And it is that connection that helps us find completion. So in a sense, it is our wretchedness that is working for us and not against us. And that is grace. Love we don't have to earn, we don't have to lie for or get through bribes. Love that comes without standards or justification, but simply because we welcome it and we have room. That is grace. It is amazing, and we deserve it. Believing the propaganda the committee tells us only hurts us. It takes a great deal of risk to get to the point where we understand that we are lovable enough even though we are not perfect, or to understand that we're lovable because we're not perfect. But getting to that place gives us a certain power, a power to march up to that room upstairs to where the committee meets and break down the door and fire every last one of them. We need to stand up to those voices like Elizabeth and say, Ronald, you're a bum. What makes me so cool is that I wear a paper bag and I chase dragons. That's why I'm grateful for those few places in the world like Roller World. I'm grateful for my family, and I'm grateful for places like this congregation. Places where there are no standards, no taste, and no class. Places where we can be as imperfect as we really are. Places where spiritual growth means telling those hurtful voices where to go. Places where perfection is a process and not an obligation. And places where we can discover the grace of being loved for being human. This morning's sermon is about love and falling in love. Falling in love with a community, with others around us, and even ourselves. And even though some of us, even though most of us at one time or another have a zit the size of Rhode Island affixed somewhere in our life, someday I promise you, if you reach a heightened state of spiritual discipline, you too may get a chance to stand in the pulpit and preach a sermon with one on your nose. But until that day, I offer you this promise. This faith, this Unitarian Universalist faith, will love you. This congregation will love you. These people will love you. And I will love you without you having to prove anything to anyone, anytime, ever. To know that is to know grace, and to know the kind of grace that saves wretches and souls like me. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I can no longer pretend that I'm not a wretch because it does me no good. I know. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. To the glory of life.